www.thebestofmoneyshow.com.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America here in Washington. I'm Douglas Mpilgam. This evening we'll talk about Africa's economic outlook post-pandemic. And with us tonight, regular panelist Suleiman Mugula is joining us from Durban, South Africa as usual. He's an independent food analyst. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. And joining us from Nairobi, Kenya, is Nelly Mora Nyangorora. She's a Kenyan independent journalist. Good evening, Nelly.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
And thank you. And thank you so much for hosting me again.
You're very much welcome. As I said, tonight we're looking at Africa's economic outlook post-pandemic. In several African countries, there has been another surge of COVID-19, but previously the continent had handled the situation fairly well. But unfortunately, the main African countries will be much more seriously affected by the socio-economic consequences of the global economic slowdown triggered by the pandemic. That's according to some analysts. But even before the COVID-19 hit, an increasing number of African countries were indebted and financially stressed. So, Suleiman, let's begin there. Given the situation that was there before and what happened during the pandemic was happening right now, how do you see Africa pulling out, given that most of its people, the economies were a bit shaky already?
Truly. First of all, Africa was caught unprepared. Unfortunately, in many countries, we have failed to get prepared, and we are not getting prepared soon. As far as the pandemic is concerned, many countries are failing, apart from a few countries like South Africa, like Ghana, Senegal, Kenya, apart from Rwanda, Namibia, apart from a few countries, the pandemic itself, many countries have failed to manage it. The numbers are surging. We are failing to ramp up our testing capabilities, our tracing capabilities, our treatment capability. Much as the pandemic had given us some breathing space to prepare ourselves, in countries like South Africa, for us, we are able to elect new hospitals very quickly, to expand facilities, to expand testing capabilities. Right now, the vaccination capability. So much as the pandemic had given room to many African countries to prepare themselves to provide capability to build some emergency hospitals, to upgrade their ICUs, to prepare oxygen and other things, many of the countries have not been able to do the same. Once the pandemic had not picked up pace the way it had picked up pace in South Africa, many countries just took it for granted and relaxed. Right now, the numbers are surging. When you go to countries like Uganda, people are dying left and right. The numbers are going up every day, and they have not prepared themselves for a surge. So before even you talk about the economic challenges, there is also the management of the pandemic itself, which is going wild. And to that extent, I can comfortably say that many countries, if they have not started the surge, they are soon getting the third wave, and it's going to be very devastating as far as I'm concerned.
I see. Nelly, you just had Suleiman there, and East Africa, first of all, its handling of the pandemic was mixed. In Burundi and Tanzania, it was a laid-back approach. In Uganda, it was sort of I don't have to describe it. And then all these East African countries read their national budgets in June. What's the situation like, given that looking at the economics and the pandemic?
In the context of the economy and the pandemic, we see that the pandemic is becoming, it's mutating. We know that when the pandemic struck globally last year, Africa did not suffer much, so to speak, in comparison to other countries like Italy, where the numbers of fatalities were very high. We are having a different strain in Africa, to be specific, and we are seeing that areas around the Lake region, counties around the Lake region, there are about 14 counties, are recording very disturbing figures in relation to the infection. And in fact, just 2 days ago, the county governors of those areas had a meeting to discuss the worrying situation, because they found out that many of those affected had not traveled anywhere. So it meant that the infection was at the community level. And because the infection was at the community level, they felt that something urgent and drastic must be taken. And in fact, they are contemplating a lockdown of these 14 counties so that they can manage the virus and the infection. And when we talk lockdown, that has a very direct impact on the economy, because when you take Uganda is on a 42-day lockdown. And this 42-day lockdown has affected the schools, because all schools are closed. All public gatherings have been suspended. The transport sector is paralyzed and suspended because there's inter-county travel that has been limited. So when we look at the ripple effect of the lockdown to the economy, we see that Africa, as much as we can say it was not in a place we can say was any better even before the pandemic, because we had a shortage of hospitals, we have a shortage of human resource, we have poor infrastructure in schools and everywhere. That was even before the pandemic. But now the pandemic has escalated the situation in such a way that we are seeing a direct impact on sectors like even tourism, because of the closure of the space, even the European space. The economies that are mainly reliant on tourism are taking a beating. We're also seeing some sectors having to scale down on their workforce, like in Kenya, the horticulture sector, which is our main exporter, had to sack about 30,000 employees and put 40,000 on unpaid leave, and others have to take a pay cut. So all these have, again, a ripple effect on the economy, because these are people with livelihoods. Now they have no job. They perhaps lock the economy. They cannot do that anymore, and it means their children might not even afford to go to school anymore. And the other issues like consumer patterns that are affected because of COVID. And we see that organizations like even the media had to scale down on its operation. Some have adopted a different business model, because we see that that disruption found the media unaware. Media heavily relies on government as a source of news and a source of revenue. When government scales down operations, when people are working from home, when there are no activities, when conferences are suspended, then it means that the media also has no source of its news. And so it had most media houses in Kenya, and even I know Uganda and Tanzania, they had to scale down. They had to just operate with an optimal or a very small workforce. At the home front, when people are working from home, the domestic helps to help around with the house. Some families, because they had suffered a reduced income, they also felt maybe we don't need a house help anymore, because now I'm working from home, I can manage my affairs, and I don't even have extra income to afford a third person. Then they've also scaled down on that. And all those have had effect on the economy.
I see. Soleimani, just had Nelly there. Many people are concerned about especially the effects of the lockdowns, where there have been shutdowns in countries in Africa, where the economies are shaky, as you mentioned earlier. How is the impact like in South Africa and elsewhere you're monitoring around the region?
Actually, South Africa, we are a bit different. Maybe we can equate ourselves to countries like Ghana. Much as there was a lockdown, apart from the first lockdown, which severely affected us because we are not prepared for it, the leadership learned very quickly on the effects of the lockdown. They were forced to make emergency measures to supply food, emergency measures to assist businesses, emergency measures. So from those, from the first lockdown, the government here realized that the ripple effects of lockdown were so severe. So subsequently, it has been very slow on locking down the economy, and because of that, we have been able to manage them. Right now, we have got a surge. We have just had a tightening up of the partial lockdown, but it is not as severe as those ones on the continent. Even on the other, in the other parts of the continent, the lockdown is severely, as Nelly has said, is really affecting the economy. Unless you have countries like Ghana, which were well organized and which try to plan like South Africa on the way how to resuscitate or to support or to prevent severe effects, most of the economies have been battered by the COVID effects economically. So what is so worrying, as far as I'm concerned, is the response of the leadership. In South Africa, there were lots of interventions like those ones which were done in Ghana. The government came up with stimulus programs to help both big business and small business to make sure that economies don't collapse completely. Some packages were put, stimulation packages were put aside where they could go and get soft loans, soft packages, like the way it was done in Ghana. Some interest rates, like in Ghana, were reduced to ensure that they don't pay the much which you are supposed to pay. Then also there was an attempt to stimulate, to protect the consumption, so that once goods are produced, people can continue consuming the goods as it were. So we find that there was payment of unemployment insurance fund, which was given to the people. Even special funds were created, special unemployment fund was created. Until recently, young men, especially who are unemployed, were being given close to $200 per month. So those are some of the interventions which were done by the South African government. And also, when you look at countries like Ghana, they made equally good interventions to protect the economy, like introducing interest rates, giving soft credits to small business and big businesses, and trying to allow to encourage local industries to produce instead of collapsing. So as far as these two countries, these good, well-organized countries are concerned, they are likely to sail through. But those others, the big bulk of African countries, they are found unprepared, and they are still unprepared even for the economic ripple effects. When you look at, for example, in East Africa, the budgets which were recently read a few days ago, you don't see any plan to resuscitate the economies. You don't see any serious stimulus packages within those plans to help big business, to help small business, to help the ordinary man on the street to continue surviving. All you see are increasing taxes. All you see is strangulation of the economy by more big taxes which are imposed on the people.
Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We're coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington tonight. We're talking about Africa's economic outlook post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And our panelists are Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa, And Nelly Mora Nyangorora, a Kenyan independent journalist who's joining us from Nairobi. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga. Suleiman referred to how some governments have been trying to help the people cope and keep prop up their economies. The situation has not been same in the East African region especially. There have been reports of governments borrowing lots of money, but that money not actually going to the people or supporting them in any way, because most of them are, in any case, are in the informal sector. How is the situation like over there?
Indeed, in Kenya, we had reports of the Auditor General showing how COVID money had been misappropriated, and there's been that bloated issue of procurement, where they're procuring equipment that is procured, but it's kept in the stores until the situation is done, and that's when they're being released, or the wrong equipment has been procured, or figures have been inflated more than the cost price of that particular equipment. And there have been all those reports of misappropriation. But at the onset, when the pandemic struck, the Kenya government did adopt some fiscal measures to cushion the people. For instance, there was the reduction of VAT, which was implemented from last year, March. It was just lifted in July from 16% to 14%. Then we also had tax relief for the low-income earners, such that even those in employment, there was a tax band that those earning below 30,000 will be exempted from paying. And then there was also the issue of corporate tax that was adjusted. And all these were meant to cushion. But even as the government moved to cushion its people, it still suffered economically. Yes, they tried to be humane in terms of the measures, but these measures still hurt the economy to the point that even the gross domestic product, which was projected to rise, took a dip. So it seems that now that the pandemic is here to stay, because we're seeing that with the mutation of the variant. It is important that African countries and Kenya adapt a different way of trying to cope with this pandemic. Africa needs to come together to have strategies that will have a long-term effect, because we see that as individual countries, the individual countries took their own measures, and the impact was not good to the economy. But now it is time to come together as Africa. And we saw recently the Africa Union came together. They are talking about manufacturing a vaccine, the issues of procuring the vials, which might be a challenge, but they are talking about it. And Morocco seems to have capacity, Rwanda seems to have capacity. And when they collaborate this way, then together Africa can make a difference, because this African continent is where we have immense natural resources. The economies, especially that rely on natural resources to survive, you see that their economies are not as affected as those that have to wait for donor support. So if Africans could come together and tap on the resources they have, collaborate to leverage on the economies of scale, and be efficient about it, and produce products that are competitive, that are quality, that can be exported, give services that are unique to its historical position, geographical position, then Africa can come with enough strategies, like even increase of digitalization to attract investment, work on products that can be produced locally, but also used here locally and also exported, avoid over-reliance on imports. You see Tanzania tried to do that when Magufuli was alive, and they were making progress. So Africa has the potential to harness what it has. All it has to do is be genuine in their collaboration, come together towards the strategy of making the continent self-reliant and also a continent that uses its own resources to feed its people and also to export. Because we have proven to be a resilient continent in the face of COVID. We see that despite COVID, and Kenya also suffered a locust invasion where the agriculture sector was heavily affected, our economies can still be said to be running, to be standing. And so that resilience can be tapped into to build something bigger. But when we work together, because there's strength in the numbers.
Suleiman, Nelly there sounds a bit optimistic about the situation.
Yeah.
Do you see African countries cooperating and pulling their boots up and moving ahead in a meaningful way?
I'm not against Nelly's optimistic approach, but the facts on the ground show us that we are far from what she's contemplating. The leadership which we have on the continent doesn't seem to be focused on pulling out Africa from the plight it is in. If the leadership we had was focused on it, for example, if you look in East Africa, yes, in Kenya there are attempts, but look at a country like Uganda, look at a country like Burundi. Uganda, what budget, what intervention have they done to help the economy? The Ugandan economy, like any other economy on the continent, was battered by COVID. The tourism industry was affected. The trade sector was affected. So, but what has government done? It has just produced a budget. But do you see any direct intervention or indirect intervention into the economy? The taxes are on upward trend. The interest rates from the banks are on an upward trend. The people who lost business have not been helped at all. There is no package which has come to help the small and medium enterprises which face the problems like in the tourism industry, the airlines, the restaurants, the hotels, all those ones. There is no mention of them being assisted, the cargo and fraud, there is no mention of them being assisted. So if the governments have not intervened to resuscitate the economy, it means these economies are going just to sink. Already, many governments in Africa were failing to finance their budget. They are depending on loans, both locally and internationally. So now, if they have not done any sensible measures, if they have not sat and developed policies that are going to revitalize agriculture, for example, so that it can replace or it can substitute for tourism, if it cannot get policy to resuscitate local production, local manufacturing, if it cannot have policies to have policies or laws which will protect those locally produced goods so that the people can be able to continue producing. So if no measures have been done, regardless of the resources which we have, the natural resources which we have, and which actually, as Mary has said, can help us to stand on our own if we use them fruitfully. But if we don't have the leadership to give the lead, then we are not likely to go any step. And our economies are going to be battered the way they have been battered, and the situation is going to become worse and worse. Unemployment is going to continue. Poverty is going to continue. We are going to be hit by maybe famine. We are going to be hit by starvation if and unless we get a new leadership which is focused on helping the people of this particular continent.
Nelly, briefly, in about a minute, to what extent is the political leadership in various countries a factor in bringing back the economies back up to speed on the continent?
Yeah, the leadership is one thing, if I must admit. There is the goodwill, I mean, there is that lip service to commitment, Yes, Kenya, we had the big four agenda: manufacturing, housing, agriculture, mm-hmm. and health mm-hmm. as pillars towards growing the economy. But COVID happened, and it's taken a beating. But even without COVID, there's rising corruption reports that even the little money that is there is misappropriated. So, yes, the leadership could be putting things on paper, but that action is wanting, it's missing. There's no action to what they are planning, to what they pledge to do.
I see. Suleiman, final thought, one minute.
Without a decisive effort to resuscitate economy, to resuscitate agriculture, to resuscitate local manufacturing, to help the small and medium enterprises within our African countries, we cannot make a move. With the corruption which is raging on the economy in Uganda, all the COVID money, the loans, the locally resourced one was eaten. In South Africa, we also struggle with some elements of corruption. Unless these corrupt indices are also dealt with decisively, and then we stimulate the economy, we are going to face a very bleak future as far as the continent is concerned.
Well, let's hope that things will be put in place and that the economies are salvaged, and maybe because before the pandemic, many African countries had very fast-growing economies, but how long that remained the same, we don't know yet. Unfortunately, we are out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thank you to Nelly Moranyangorora, Kenyan independent journalist. Thanks a lot, Nelly, for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Douglas, for hosting me once again.
You're very much welcome. And thank you, Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Suleiman, thanks a lot.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for
inviting me. You're welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. All you have to do is go to our main website, click on programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga, wishing you all the best.
Hello, I'm Peter Klote, the host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. This is one of the stories we will be covering on Nightline Africa. Former South African President Jacob Zuma is scheduled to report to jail on Sunday. We'll have a reaction from a spokesperson. Tune in, you'll be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, a conversation with Congressman John Curtis, a Republican from the western state of Utah. A conservationist, Representative Curtis tells VOA the need for more options to combat climate change, the origins of the newly formed Conservative Climate Caucus, his views on U.S.-China relations, and much more. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is James Barton, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the globe, plus we delve into the context of the day's biggest stories with interviews with experts, that place the story into context to understand why it matters. VOA's International Edition, your best source for news and information.